It's Tuesday, May 15th, The Monty Show. We are live on Periscope. Make sure you find us on Twitter, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show, because we stream this show live on Periscope every day, right about 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern. We do The Monty Show today, the ridiculous frozen envelope Olympics known as the NBA Draft Lottery. We got to talk Western Conference Finals, Eastern Conference Finals. We've got to talk NL West, a massive name suspended in baseball today, Robbie Cano, don't you know? Yes. So why don't we start talking draft lottery? How much do you believe in the draft lottery, by the way? Because I'm a skeptic. I got to tell you, with the NBA draft lottery, I am a skeptic.
Which means what?
Which means I do believe in frozen envelopes. I do believe in, I think the NBA goes out of its way to make sure that Cleveland got the number one pick the year LeBron was coming out. I'm probably a bit of a conspiracy theorist on that. I get it.
Yeah.
But my feeling is that no sport is truly 100% honest because it's bad for business, to be honest.
Right.
That's just my opinion. So do you buy into the honesty of the NBA draft lottery?
Not particularly. I mean, I think you're right. It's awfully convenient that, you know, the year LeBron's coming out, the Cavs get the number one pick, right? Like, I totally understand what you're saying. And I agree with your point there. But at the same time, you know, business is business. You're right. You know, and who's really complaining that the Cavs got the number one overall pick?
So far, number 14 is the Nuggets. 13 is the Clippers. 12 is the Clippers. Charlotte 11, the Sixers are 10th, the Knicks are 9th. We are into the top 8, and the Cleveland Cavaliers will get the 8th pick.
The land.
They get the 8th pick in the draft, and I think the Cavs are one of the more interesting stories here because of how much is going on with them and what's going on with LeBron. I think that's a big deal. The Bulls get the number 7 pick in the draft. I'm such a terrible fan of the Bulls. Like, it is incredibly frustrating. Yeah, well, what's to be a fan of is that this used to be a great organization during the Jordan years, and we really have done nothing since the Jordan years ended.
Yeah.
Like, nothing. Mavericks are 5. Orlando is 6, so the top 4 picks now are in. That's
drama
all we're
time.
Waiting for.
Drama time.
The Memphis Grizzlies will go 4th, so Luka Doncic does not go to Memphis. So now it's Sacramento, Atlanta, and the Phoenix Suns are the last 3 left. And I think if you're a Phoenix Suns fan, you got to feel really good here because the Suns have the highest odds of getting that number 1 pick.
Yeah.
Because of how bad they were.
Yeah.
But that's just me. So do you... If you're the Suns, you're drafting Ayton, right?
Have to, like, so without a doubt.
My guess is that Doncic goes number 2. Do you like Luka Doncic? Are you a Doncic guy?
I mean, I think he's going to be a solid NBA player. I think he's shown that he's got the swag. He's one of the best players over in Europe, and I think that's really saying something. But there is, again, just like in baseball, I'll say the same thing here, there is a huge adjustment period to the pace and the quality of the NBA. I mean, guys here are better. Like, the worst player in the NBA is better than a lot of those players over there in Europe. And I think that's really saying something. And so while DeAndre Ayton is a surefire, solid pick, like going to be a game changer for your organization,
yeah,
I think, you know, Luka is as close to being surefire without actually being surefire that you can get. I mean,
I think Doncic is going to be a fantastic pro, but if you draft DeAndre Ayton, he's almost can't miss.
Yeah.
The guy is just such a star. I really like DeAndre Ayton's game. So I have no problem whoever gets the number 1 pick, and especially if it's the Suns, he plays at Arizona.
Yeah.
Like, that's a no-brainer. I could absolutely see that happening. My question is, and this is, you know, this is all hyperbole now, if you're Sacramento, I think your roster is quite interesting, but you're a really bad team.
Yeah.
They love the Euro player in Sacramento. If they get the number 1 pick, I think it's certainly Ayton. But if the Kings are there at number 2, I think they're taking Luka Doncic.
Yeah. I mean, why wouldn't you? And I think it'd be interesting if you know, if the Suns for some reason, you know, got the number one pick and for some reason took Luka, you know, what does that do for the rest of the draft? I mean, that makes waves. I mean, that says, you know, that tells you the direction they want to go. And I almost could kind of see the logic in it just because Devin Booker needs somebody to run with. And that was supposed to be Josh Jackson. And while I would say for three quarters of the season he was a nobody in his rookie year, the last quarter of the season he came alive. I mean, he was playing good basketball. I think they saw good development out of him, but he wasn't quite the star that everybody thought he was going to be coming out of college. Yeah. Yep. And I think that really matters. I mean, there's a big difference between, you know, Jason Tatum struggling offensively and kind of getting used to the flow of an NBA game and now being a star, an absolute bona fide star in the playoffs, and Josh Jackson adjusting and never really becoming anything for the Suns in his first season.
The problem is the Kings don't need a point guard.
Yeah.
And really, I thought their guards played pretty well this year, and De'Aaron developing, and they need a power player up front, which tells you that, I mean, they would love DeAndre Ayton.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know anybody that wouldn't love DeAndre Ayton. You know, Marvin Bagley from Duke, obviously, is another player that I think could really help them up front. This is a big draft. There's a lot of power forwards and centers in this draft. Jaren Jackson comes to mind right away. But it'll be interesting to see how all of that plays out and who you wind up going with, because a lot of people love Mohamed Bamba from Texas. I don't happen to be a Bamba guy. That would not be my pick. But, man, I think DeAndre Ayton, I'd be stunned if Ayton didn't go number one.
Yeah,
like I don't know how he doesn't go number one.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So as we sit here and wait for the final three picks to be in, and now we get those picks, the third pick in the 2018 NBA draft goes to the Atlanta Hawks. So it is down to the Kings and the Suns. The Suns have to win this. Right, the Suns have to win this. The Phoenix Suns will get the number one pick in the NBA draft. It'll be Suns, Kings, and Hawks.
Yeah,
I think this locks it up. That'll be DeAndre Ayton. I think the Kings. I don't think the Kings will take Luka Doncic. I really don't. I think they don't. He's a point guard, and they're set at guard.
Yeah,
I think they probably wind up and go Marvin Bagley at number two. Would be my guess. And then how about the Atlanta Hawks? Because I think we all are aware that Atlanta needs everything. Yeah. I think Luka Doncic winds up in Atlanta.
Yeah, and that would be actually a nice fit for a guy coming over from Europe, right? Like, you're going into a market where not a lot of pressure to win, just pressure to develop and really get better.
So the top 10 here, Phoenix, Sacramento, Atlanta, Memphis, Dallas, Orlando, Chicago, Cleveland, the Knicks, and the Sixers.
Sixers are still going to get quality.
I mean,
10.
Oh, yeah. I think if you're down at 10, you're looking at guys like Trae Young, Colin Sexton. You know, Bridges from Villanova certainly is going to be there at number 10. Michael Porter Jr. will be there at the bottom of the first 10 picks.
Yeah.
There's a lot of quality guys that are going to be there at number 10. Is there any question that the Phoenix Suns get DeAndre Ayton with the number one pick?
Not even. There shouldn't even be. Like, this is a no-doubter. Like, that he is absolutely what they need. I mean, they've been struggling for years. For what? 3 years now we've been hearing about Dragan Bender and how he needs to be the guy and how Alex Len hasn't really been what they needed him to be.
Yep.
And we covered it firsthand, and it's absolutely true. I mean, Dragan Bender has developed a little bit, but he's not the guy that they needed him to be. And so I think it is the absolute logical and right thing to do to get Ayton. I mean, just solidify that position. And even to a point where at least now Booker has somebody else he can rely on and say, you know what? This guy's going to be with me on the floor to start every single game. And nothing to, no questions.
Well, and Devin Booker, I had a great conversation on Twitter this morning with a guy about whether or not Devin Booker is a true superstar. And I think he is. This video came out today of LeBron James shirtless shooting, you know, 9 hours before tip-off of game two tonight. And people were going crazy about it. Look how much hard work he's putting in. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, you know, I covered Michael Jordan. He did the same thing. I covered Kobe Bryant. He did the same thing. We covered Devin Booker. He did the same thing. You know, like these, the truly elite players work harder work smarter than everybody else.
Well, and it's a true mind game, right? Like, you know, LeBron's there 9 hours before the game.
Yeah.
And what does that say? It's not, he's not going to do that only because he needs to get his work in and he wants to get extra work. What he's doing is he's saying to the Celtics, I'm here before you and I'm going to outwork you in every essence of the game.
I just don't believe that. I just think
that was the case with Kobe.
I think LeBron didn't play well. I think LeBron understands how important this is. You know, I think it's one of those things where he's a guy that is really, you know, LeBron's a guy that's really prideful, and he wants to be somebody that wins. And I think he understands what's on the line this year. Kobe did it because he wanted to intimidate people. Kobe would show up at the arena at like 6, 7 in the morning after a really bad performance. Okay, that was because he wanted to improve. He'd show up at 5 o'clock at night before like a 7:30 game just so he could be the first guy on the floor warming up, so that the opponent saw that, so that his teammates saw that.
Mm-hmm.
That's who Kobe was. Kobe never lost in practice. That was his goal. Now, of course he did, but he'll tell you he never lost in practice. Jordan was that way. Bird was that way. Like, that's the mentality you have to have. Devin Booker has that mentality. You're going to see Devin Booker all summer long playing in these huge pickup games that happen every single year. And we see it with Paul George, Carmelo. And I'm not talking about the Drew, or I'm talking about the games that nobody knows about,
yep,
that are invitation only, where the elite basketball coaches, guys like DJ Spackman, who teach handle and dribble, and those guys have pickup games just for their clients. And their clients are guys like Book, Melo, LeBron. Kobe was notorious for showing up at pickup games over the summer. All of these guys play, and they play a lot. And especially now that these guys are so young, the younger guys grew up playing pickup basketball on the street. Those guys grew up at places like Rucker Park. They grew up playing on blacktop. So that's what they know. And a lot of people will tell you, well, what happens if they get hurt? And I'm going to tell you, I don't care if a guy like Devin Booker blows his knee out or blows his Achilles out playing pickup basketball in July, I'm totally fine with that. I have no problem with it. It sucks.
Yeah.
It's a bummer. I have no problem with it. Now, if he blows his shoulder out Madison Bumgarner style driving a dirt bike, I'm pissed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Playing basketball? How are you going to tell Devin Booker not to play basketball?
You're not. I mean,
he's a star, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah, I mean, he is a star. I think he's a guy that is not going to be considered in that elite group that we always talk about, the KDs, LeBron, like Harden. Like, he's not in that group yet, but he will be. I mean, there's no doubt about it. He will be.
Best player in this draft for you?
I would have to go Ayton. I mean, the pure dominance is just off the charts. I mean, you look at A, having the body, but B, just the skill in his IQ. I mean, he's a complete player, man. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, that's who he is. And his only flaw is that he's never played an NBA game before. I mean, that's really going to be his only adjustment, playing against grown-ass men instead of playing against kids that he can dominate physically. Because isn't that the biggest difference, right? When you come out of college as a guy like Ayton, you've dominated guys physically. You've been able to say, you know what, this is big boy ball. I'm just going to out-physical you.
Yeah.
Right? And, like, you go to the NBA, and all of a sudden, that's only happening every other night or, you know, once in a little while.
Correct, yes.
Most nights, you're not going to be able to do that. And so now it's falling down to your skill, and that's where guys have to improve. And so we'll see what his base is, where he starts off. I mean, is he better than, like, a Joel Embiid? I don't know.
Nah.
Embiid is just on another level.
He's
going
to have to earn
planet,
that. Yeah,
dude.
He's going to have to earn that.
Yeah, you know.
My guy is Michael Porter Jr. from Missouri. He's somebody that I think is going to play the three in the NBA, and he's 6'10", 230. And he can really handle, he can really shoot, he can create. Like, he's the guy, he is built to play in today's NBA. If he can show that he can shoot at the NBA level, summer league will be huge for a guy like that. If he can show that he can play at that level, he could really be a weapon. But I think this is a very, very good draft for big guys. It's guys like Trae Young that I don't know about. Trae Young, he's about to sign this huge deal with Puma, and Okay, I'm all right. I just don't know what he's going to be like in the NBA. So
flashy player in college, I don't know that it translates to the NBA game. I mean, we'll have to see. I mean, everybody was referring to Trae Young as the Steph Curry of college, right? Like the next Steph Curry. And I don't know. I don't know that we're ever going to see another player quite like Steph. I mean, you can try to
beat Steph. No, I don't think so either.
But I don't think we're ever going to see another guy do what Steph does to this game. And you know, I just... We'll have to see. There's no doubt he's going to have to improve.
Let's talk some Steph Curry and some hoop because we're about 20 minutes away from tip-off here. But I want to get to game one last night of the Western Conference Finals. Record-setting ratings for TNT. Highest-rated basketball game. 8.8 million people watched that game. It beat the Kings and Lakers from 2002. Wildly entertaining ball game. And really, it lived up to what everybody wanted to see in this series.
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, not to dislocate my shoulder, patting myself on the back, but this game kind of went exactly how we said it would go.
Yeah.
Are you surprised? I'm not going to say it was easy, but are you surprised of how much control the Warriors had in that game?
Well, I think a little bit because you would expect Houston to come out and have a great game one. In the same fashion that the Celtics were able to have just a great game one, right? Like, I was expecting at least... And it was close. It's not as though the Rockets didn't put up a fight because they put up one hell of a fight. But it interesting that, you know, they come out and get up to this 12-4 lead, and then it was like the Warriors just said, we had enough of that. This game's going in a different direction now. And I thought the biggest difference when you compare both series game ones is that KD came out and turned it on, and he got his early, and he got into the flow of the game.
He was so good.
I think it's dominant. The aggressiveness, and it's what, again, we love to hate Draymond, but, you know, I agree with Draymond that Kevin Durant's got to just go and get his and be that guy. He's got to be the elite player that he is, and then they need to function around his shot selection. I mean, there were times in that game where I didn't agree with some of the threes he took, like some of the in transition threes that he took. I was like, that's a bad possession. This is still a close game. Like, get a good look, you know. But in that same breath, I'm thinking to myself, he's gotten a ton of good looks.
Yeah,
he's gotten a ton of points,
and he hasn't missed. And the thing about KD last night that I thought was so remarkable is he was making shots in double coverage. Guys had a hand in his face, balls going in.
Yeah.
Like, he was making everything, but I still had that same feeling about Steph Curry, that he's not quite into this game.
He just looked tired, man. To me, he looked tired. And I know that's an excuse, and I know if you're out there, you got to perform, and I totally subscribe to that. But I just got the sense that he never found his rhythm, and at the same time, he was just tired. I mean, that was a fast-paced game. I mean, they were going up and down, back and forth, like, the whole game. And so I'm thinking to myself, well, is this where Steph kind of is paying the price for missing so many games? I mean, you know, this series is going to go quick.
Or is Steph Curry just not a great playoff performer?
I don't know.
Because we've talked about this. His per-game playoff numbers and his per-36 playoff numbers are higher than his regular season numbers.
Yeah.
But we've seen long stretches, particularly in that one, that loss to the Cavs in the NBA Finals, where he just disappears. And I wonder, if I'm the Golden State Warriors, I probably count on Kevin Durant a heck of a lot more. Now, having said that, I thought Steph really had an impact on their offense. You know, the part of the game that really stood out to me watching film study on NBA TV today was that the Warriors stole the Spurs offense. They ran that shallow, and we were talking about it when it was happening because Klay was so wide open for so much of that game.
So many times.
But it's because they were running a play called shallow, where in last night's case, Steph would kick the ball to the wing, and Draymond would come deep from the paint after Steph ran a shallow cut and kind of looped around. And Draymond set the pick, and it just befuddled Houston. They never rotated. They weren't aggressive. Klay was wide open because Steph was penetrating all he wanted. Like, it was textbook basketball.
Yeah.
I was surprised that Houston just was that bad. They were awful defensively.
Well, nobody said they're a great defensive team, and this is what we were talking about yesterday on the show, and we were outlining the keys to the game, and one of the keys we discussed is that Houston's going to have to play good defense to win this series.
Yes.
They're not good enough to outshoot or overpower the Warriors, because the Warriors just showed last night, we're going to overpower you. I mean, it's not, it wasn't even close. I mean, at the, in the last, you know, there was 8 minutes to go or 9 minutes to go. And I'm sitting here saying, where the hell is James Harden? I don't know.
I don't know.
And you're saying, you were saying, well, he's resting. And I said, he can't afford to rest. It's like Kevin Durant coming back.
He was really hurting them. And the thing that was interesting is he dribbled the ball on a couple of occasions so deep into the shot clock that it caused 24-second violations after he passed.
Yeah.
They will not win this series. And I'll go this far. If they don't stop playing isolation basketball, they will get swept. Because the Warriors are too aggressive on the pick and roll, and those changes, Steph, like everybody was talking about how Chris Paul was dominating Steph Curry. Well, he might have dominated Steph Curry, but the help defense was fantastic. And the discipline in the help defense was fantastic by Golden State last night.
Yeah, I thought the chemistry between Durant and Curry early in the game when, you know, Harden and Capella were trying to pick and roll was outstanding. I mean, you saw them put a priority on stopping James Harden. They were going to allow Capella to get his, and I totally agree with it. Make sure that James Harden doesn't get going. And the way you do that, and again, I don't mean to beat this drum. We talked about this yesterday. The way you do that is you get in James Harden's grill early in the game, right? You push up. You pick him up or further up the court, and you don't let him just kind of walk up.
Yeah.
And then sooner or later, it's what you were saying. He's going to play that ISO ball. He's going to dribble for 20 seconds, and then when he realizes he's running out of time and, you know, hits the panic button, he's going to pass it. And they're going to take a terrible shot, and all of a sudden, it's this big, long rebound, and the Warriors are already back on offense before, you know, Houston can get back.
Who wins game two? Because I'm taking Golden State.
I think there's a real chance that Golden State wins game two after last night.
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, this is where the whole Brad Stevens voodoo comes out in comparison to other coaches in the playoffs, because Brad Stevens wins game one with the Celtics, and now all of a sudden, I'm looking at, you know, D'Antonio, and I'm saying, well, what are you going to do exactly? Like, where do you go from here? Because you essentially played the same brand of basketball that you've been playing all year, and you lost the game.
It's who you are.
You lost the game. And we were talking about this when we first got into the playoffs that, you know, Portland and Houston led the league in isolation possessions.
Yes.
Playing one-on-one basketball. And like
you just said,
it's really
hard to do that.
You're not going to win against Golden State doing that, because the problem is that if you miss playing isolation basketball, the Warriors are going to make you pay in transition. They have too many good shooters.
Well, and the other thing that stands out, and like in this Cleveland-Boston game tonight, it'll be transition that'll determine the game. But half court is what will ultimately win the game.
Yeah.
Like the flow of the game will be determined by who gets out on the break and transition and how all that goes. And if you want to win, LeBron James can't turn the ball over seven times in the half court, which he did. He cannot miss the easy turnaround jumpers, which he did. And I think that's why LeBron was out so early today. He was working early because he was terrible in game one.
What do you make of the Celtics defense on LeBron? Was it for real, or was that LeBron just not having a good game?
No, I think he was really surprised that the help defense was so good, because he didn't have anywhere to go with the ball when he was doubled. Because Marcus Morris played really good defense on LeBron, but the help defense was really good.
Turnover to start the game.
Yeah.
And they played pick and roll on the left wing. LeBron, instead of going up for a dunk, passes it to the corner and turns it over.
Yeah. Turnover number one for LeBron James. I mean, this is the problem. Boston is really disciplined out of the pick and roll on the defensive end.
And it's fascinating to watch. It's almost an art form to play
that defense.
And
Boston drops a three to start the game. Like, this is what happens.
This is just a continuation, isn't it?
This is exactly what happens. Boston's going to force Cleveland to stop what they couldn't stop in game one. And to me, that's a huge problem. That is a huge, huge problem for the Cleveland Cavaliers. I think this is going to be a 1 or 2 point game. It's going to be really close. LeBron's going to have a 40-point night.
Does game two in Boston define the rest of the series? If the Celtics win this game, do they go on to win the series? I think they do.
Well, their chance improves exponentially.
Well, sure, but I'm just saying you're playing LeBron, and there's something to that. And my point here is that if you win this game, yeah, the odds go up, but I think you put yourself in a great position to force LeBron to feel pressure, dude.
Boy, LeBron had a wide-open dunk, and Kevin Love almost threw the ball away. I mean, they're playing tight basketball. And LeBron goes right to the basket. I mean, they're playing really tight basketball, Boston or Cleveland is. And this is my point. LeBron's going to have a 40-point game, but somebody will have to step up. Kevin Love or somebody, because the supporting cast was also the problem. The supporting cast didn't get the job done. And George Hill, it's really neat that you have, you know, dribbling skills of a freaking you know, circus guy, but you got to score.
Yeah,
like you got to score.
He just did that.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting. We'll see. Is it a must win? I hate that term.
It's close.
But boy, it's as close. If there is such a thing as a must win in the playoffs, this is about as must win as it gets.
For the Cavs.
Yeah. I mean, it is really, really critical. And I think the way that they win this game is they don't turn the ball over, which they just did for the third time tonight.
Already. Inside the first 5 minutes.
Inside the first 2 minutes. They've turned it over three times. Like, that's how they will win. They will value the basketball.
And
quality
real quick,
possessions.
On that point, when you're watching these games, pay attention to that, because those are extra possessions that guys like KD and Jason Tatum and, you know, Curry are getting. Those are more opportunities than they would have gotten.
Yeah, and by the way, Jaylen Brown has just been unbelievable.
Yeah.
He is dominating Cleveland. He's getting anything he wants.
In the land.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, couple more basketball notes before we get to baseball. What do you make of this Michael Jordan ESPN Netflix documentary? It's a 10-part series that will include hundreds of hours of never before seen clips of Jordan.
I love it. I mean, we have this fascination with Jordan, right? Like anything, and especially my generation, because we didn't get to experience Jordan
the
way
mythical.
Your generation. Oh, absolutely.
He's a myth.
I got to watch Jordan when he was walking out the door, right, as a wizard. That was not the greatness of Michael Jordan, right? Like, you got to watch Jordan in the greatest parts of his career.
In his prime.
In his prime. And so I think it has a different meaning for each of us, but at the same time, we're both going to be all over that. I mean, there's no way I'm missing that. Like, I need to see it.
I can't wait. Personally, I've been waiting for a Michael Jordan inside introspective. Michael Jordan's involved in the project. He will narrate. He will be interviewed. Like,
it'd be awesome, dude.
I've been waiting for this. But here's a question. What's the next one? Because there's a lot of guys out there that you could do a documentary on, but very few will have the Michael Jordan mystique, if any.
I mean, you can count them on one hand almost. I mean, I don't even know that you can. I mean, it's Jordan.
No, there's one guy. There's one guy.
Okay.
Derek Jeter.
He's not even as mystical as Jordan is, in my opinion. I mean, Jeter is one of the best players to ever play baseball.
He's baseball royalty.
For sure, yeah.
He is... And sadly, I think it's damaged him a little bit right now that he bought the Marlins and it's gone the way it's gone so far. But if you do a documentary where he's first person and he's talking about his life and this, and hey, by the
That's
way...
great content.
Yeah, talk to me about those gift baskets and... Hey, did you really tap all that ass and on the way out the door hand him a gift basket, Derek? Like, if you're doing a documentary, he's got to be asked by that. By the way, why were you such an a-hole the day you bought the Marlins? And what happened to Marlins, man? And
yeah.
Like, if Derek Jeter's doing that, who's not watching that? Who's not watching Tiger Woods talk about pounding Perkins waitresses in the parking lot in the backseat of his SUV?
But that's what we all love. We love that behind the scenes, like, hey, this was one of the in the moment when we found out about it, was like one of the worst things that ever happened. That like it was a bomb on the sports world when Tiger Woods began his fall from greatness in golf, right? And so I'm with you. If they create some kind of documentary or some kind of series and Tiger's involved, and it's like the Nature Boy thing, right? With Ric Flair, if they do something
Woo!
Like that, if Sorry. You do something like that with Jeter or Tiger, I mean, that would just be incredible.
So here's one guy that I think has already done it, and he's so readily available to the media and to Hollywood that I think it would be diminished a bit. Kobe Bryant. We've already seen it with Kobe the last year of his career when he was rehabbing, and we saw the helicopter rides. We saw Vanessa and the kids.
Yeah.
So I don't know that that's there.
I'd still watch it.
Well, I'm sure. Well, yeah, everybody would watch it, but it's not on the level of a Michael Jordan documentary.
No, because I don't think Michael's ever really been done the right, like, justice.
Does Michael Jordan talk about gambling in the death of his father? Does Michael Jordan admit that he is was a gambling addict? Will the documentary filmmakers, if this is a 30 for 30 thing, type thing, will the filmmakers ask him, hey, did you go play baseball because you got suspended? Will that question be asked? Because as a Bulls fan and as a Michael Jordan's is arguably my favorite athlete ever. Walter Payton and Michael Jordan are very close. Ryan Sandberg would be, you know, 1C.
Yeah.
But I wonder if Michael Jordan, I don't believe it, but I think there's...
But you have to ask the question to establish credibility within that kind of a documentary, right? Like you can't
I think
just
you do.
Ask, you can't just ask cupcake questions like, what was it like making the shot over Elo? What was it like, you know...
Did you push off on Russell?
Did you push off?
Like, did you push off on Russell?
Yeah.
Were you poisoned in Salt Lake City? Because people say that he was poisoned in the Jazz series and in the flu game.
One of the best shoes ever made.
Were you poisoned? Yeah, absolutely. Were you poisoned? Like, these are questions that have to be asked. Did you push off on Brian Russell? Did that happen?
Well, and of course, everybody knows the answer that he's going to give, but it adds to, like I said, it adds to the credibility of the content. You have to ask him tough questions along with the questions that everybody wants to ask, right? Like, there's a laundry list of
did you
of
sign
questions.
Off on Dennis Rodman?
Yeah, you know, exactly. Things
do you
like
hate
that.
Phil Jackson?
Yeah, you know,
yeah,
100%.
Yeah, why did Horace Grant wind up going to Orlando?
Yeah.
Should you have won more championships? Would you have won 8 championships if you hadn't gone and played baseball?
Will you win one as an owner?
Do you want to kick Bob Costas in the balls? those are all very valid questions, I think. But after Jordan, I'd love to see a Tiger Woods documentary.
Does he need to do it? For him,
no,
I mean.
No, nobody needs to do it. But a guy like Tiger Woods, I think there's a real redemption or redemptive...
There's an opportunity.
Redemptive therapy, if you will, for him to admit that, yeah, Elin was a really nice girl, but how do you turn down porn stars in Dubai on top of a building on a driving range? Because he allegedly had sex on top of the Dubai Tower, the golf course.
Right.
Built with the,
yes, yes.
You know, I mean, those are like, dude, you're Tiger Woods.
But like,
no, wait, Eldrick, I got to ask you this, Al. Eldrick, let me ask you this. Were you really in bed with a hooker when you found out your dad died? Wait, Tiger,
dude.
let me ask you this. Dude, seriously.
Dude, that's sketch territory.
Tiger, I got to ask you this. The best you could do was a Perkins waitress in the parking lot in the backseat of an SUV?
Well, it's certainly not going to be asked like that. I can tell you that right now.
Wait. Mr. Woods. The best you could do was a Perkins waitress in the backseat of an SUV. You're Tiger Woods. Like, go to the mall, bro. They'll line up for you at the mall. Go to the mall, man.
Yeah.
You like Perkins, not Cracker Barrel, not even Waffle House. Perkins? Really?
Yeah.
Come on. Fuddruckers maybe, but Perkins? Like, those are the kind of things that I need to know. Now, you're right. I have the feeling Michael's going to talk about his father's death. I don't think anybody will ask him if he was suspended from basketball, so he went
to
play
baseball.
No,
that's a really sketch. That's
will that happen?
Very sketch.
But the questions, that's what I want
to
know.
Well, you have to ask the question, but you can't expect him to answer it truthfully.
Who's a baseball guy that you'd want to hear from? Like, who's that guy? Is there a guy? Because you don't seem to like Derek Jeter. You told, what did you say in the pre-show meeting?
That I think, you know, Derek Jeter, you're right that Derek Jeter is baseball royalty. And absolutely growing up, he was somebody I idolized. But at the same time, I think Manny Machado is and will be better statistically than Jeter was.
Guys, he just said Manny Machado will have a better career than Derek Jeter. Manny Machado get that 3,000 hits?
Dude.
Manny Machado hit a home run for his 3,000th hit? By the way, does Manny Machado ever make the play that Derek Jeter made at the Oakland Coliseum to get Giambi at the plate because the Giambis don't slide? But and that's not here nor there. Derek still made the best instinctual play in the history of baseball. And you want to say that Manny Machado... Now, you know I don't let you stay in this house if you smoke crack. But you want to say that Manny Machado is going to have a better career than Derek Jeter. How many rings does Manny win?
Here we go.
No, I'm serious.
Well, you're the Cubs are trying to get him. So, I don't know. Answer the question yourself. How many does he win? He's not going to be an Oriole his entire career. So, he's already losing in that category.
What did Derek...
He'll never have the mystique that Derek
Jeter
has.
Jake, what is Derek Jeter's nickname?
I don't know.
The captain.
Great. He played for the Yankees his entire career in a different era of baseball.
No. Not only did he play for the Yankees, he was the captain...
Right, I understand.
Of the New York, which they don't have on every Yankee team. It is special to be the captain of the New York Yankees. Like this guy, Derek Jeter, was just different.
Right,
Derek Jeter
I get it.
Is arguably the most successful shortstop in the history of baseball.
And I'm telling you that Manny Machado is an outright better baseball player than Jeter was.
Man. Okay.
Better hitter, right? Better all-around hitter, right? Because what did Jeter do? Yeah, I get it.
He got 3,000 hits.
Right, I get it.
You know, like, if you look, I don't even know Derek's numbers. Derek Jeter could hit you a home run. Derek Jeter absolutely.
Hold on. Before we just scrape over the power side of things.
Yeah.
Manny Machado is the superior power hitter.
Right.
We can agree on that, right?
But Derek Jeter's a professional hitter.
Right, and so is Machado.
No, Manny Machado's a home run hitter.
Mm-hmm.
Derek Jeter, if you look at the numbers, they don't lie. I think Derek Jeter, until the last 5 years of his career, was a 300 hitter. If memory serves, he was a 260 career hitter.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing, and I'm not slighting Derek Jeter, but you're so hard over Derek Jeter that you won't at least admit that Manny Machado is, like, he's a better player right now than Jeter was at the same age, dude.
No, oh my God. Okay, so you say things like that, and then, like, I want to kill you.
Okay.
Derek Jeter, I don't even know what to say to that. Derek Jeter was like the rookie of the year. Derek Jeter was this is a guy that's got 1,300 RBIs.
Right, I'm not talking about all time. At age 25.
Right, how many times has Manny Machado gotten 200 hits? By 25, Derek Jeter had done it twice, and he had 190, or he'd have done it three times.
So what is his WAR then? What is Jeter's WAR?
Derek Jeter, I don't have his WAR right in front of me, to be honest with you. But the guy just is... And I don't even know that WAR matters. His career WAR was 72.4. Like Derek Jeter, like at age 25, his age 25 season, you should just stop. His WAR at age 25 was 8. He had an 8.0 WAR at age 25. Like Derek Jeter's arguably the best player of his generation.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's 72 WAR in his career, like
right?
That's unbelievable, and that doesn't even talk about the fact that the guy had 3,400 hits, 500 doubles, 60 triples, 260 home runs,
which Machado will easily surpass.
Right, the home runs now in this generation, like, and that's the other thing.
Dude,
I think
he played in the steroid area. What do you mean?
Jeter, right? That's my point.
Yeah, that's
Derek
what I'm
Jeter,
saying.
Derek Jeter hit 260 home runs in the steroid era. What does that tell you? Derek Jeter wasn't a user. Derek Jeter was a guy that modeled his swing to hit balls out of right field at Yankee Stadium. That's what Derek Jeter did.
Which means what he really did was just hit a lot of balls through the right side, and that's how he got the 3,000 hits.
Right. Okay, great. If everybody did that, there'd be a hell of a lot more 3,000 hitters. The art of going the other way, why do you think we all shift now? Because nobody goes the other way. Like, hitting the baseball the other way is an art form. You couldn't shift on Derek Jeter. You could shift to hit the ball the other way, and he'll pull it. Derek Jeter, and this is the hard part about the Jordan versus Kobe conversation, or LeBron versus Jordan. Guys your age, never saw Derek Jeter. You don't remember watching Derek Jeter play.
Well, I mean, I watched him for a long time.
I watched Derek Jeter play on a regular basis. Like, right. He was a star. He was in his prime. He's one of the best baseball players I've ever seen. Like, he's got... you walked into it. He had a 72.4 war. That's unbelievable. Unbelievable. I mean, the guy... And he, by the way, he did all this as a Yankee. He didn't have to go Giambi or A-Rod. Like, Derek Jeter never apologized for anything. Even his crappy seasons at the end of his career, where he was hitting 190, where he was hitting 256. Derek Jeter, listen, if Manny Machado has a better career than Derek Jeter, I mean, come on. Well, I mean, if you look at the World Series alone, Derek Jeter hit 321 in the World Series. His on-base percentage in the World Series was 384.
Right, in a time
in the World Series.
In a time when nobody was shifting and all he had to do was poke the ball through the right side.
Oh, come on. All he had to do.
That's it. I'm being serious. I'm being serious.
Come on. He had 200 hits in
right.
You're just as a
the
playoff
juice. You're
guy.
Not comparing the brand of baseball that he was playing in versus today's game. Jeter wouldn't be the same guy if he was playing in today's game.
Oh, sure he would. No, he would not. Derek Jeter would be a dominant offensive player.
No, he wouldn't.
Oh, sure he
wouldn't.
Why?
Because he would be hitting against the shift. There's
no
doubt.
No, they would not shift
on
Derek Jeter.
I think they
would. No, you wouldn't. Because Derek,
I'm not saying they're
going
to swing everybody to the right side. What I'm saying is that there's statistics to back it up, to put guys in the right position at the right time, like playing right up the middle. Or maybe the second baseman plays 5 feet in one direction and gets to balls that other second basemen wouldn't get to because they're shifted slightly instead of like three guys on the right side.
Yeah, I think, and I don't fault you for this, I just think you don't have the frame of reference to understand that you're having a moronic conversation with yourself. Because saying that teams would shift on Derek Jeter, I mean, you could throw him inside.
Who's the most complete offensive hitter right now in the game?
The most
Trout?
Complete offensive play is probably today, like right now on a body of work, is probably Bryce Harper. You can't shift Bryce Harper. You can't shift Mike Trout. You know, like, I don't know how you pitch to, like, look at Aaron Judge right now. You know, but I'm probably taking Trout and Harper over. I think Trout and Harper are on a level of their own offensively. You know, I think they can just do it all. And so many people are pointing that, you know, Bryce Harper's hitting two something.
The average doesn't matter this year. So many guys are struggling. Bryce Harper's still producing.
Derek was on a different level.
Yeah, I get it. He's the best to ever do it.
Alex Rodriguez moved to third base for Derek Jeter. Like, I mean, the point is, I think you have to understand who Derek Jeter was. Let's keep talking baseball here on the show, because I'm gonna let you off the hook.
No, you can just gloss me over about the Diamondbacks. I don't even have to say anything. I've been talking about how this is going to happen for like a month.
I didn't even bring it up.
For like a month, seriously. I mean, go back and watch the tape.
And what are you talking about?
A.J. Pollock is hurt and is going to be hurt for a good portion of the season.
A.J. Pollock dove for a ball last night in the outfield that he missed. And at the end of the day, it went for an inside-the-park home run, but it also cost him 6 to 8 weeks of his season because he broke his thumb.
Yeah.
And this has been the Achilles heel.
And by the way,
no,
it's his left
intended.
Hand, not his right hand. Thank God.
Glove
That's
hand.
A big deal.
Yeah. Glove hand. He is out 6 to 8 weeks, and he has been the only best player on the Diamondbacks.
And by the way, in a year when Goldschmidt isn't producing the same
At
way
all.
He usually
But
has
see,
been.
Here's the other problem with Paul Goldschmidt. His metrics have been on the way down the last 3 years. So it's kind of, and he's had productive years. Obviously, last year I thought he should have been the MVP. But
how many years has he had like that, though? I mean, how many times, like?
Any other market.
But he's not that guy. Yeah, that's a different conversation, I guess.
I think it's really interesting that A.J. Pollock, now they have to find a way to replace that production.
You don't.
Yeah, I don't think you will, because you're going to have to do that with the Dysons and these Chris Owings
like,
of the world.
But those guys aren't the same guy that Pollock is.
No, they're not.
And I want people to understand, predicting that a guy's going to get hurt is not saying he sucks, because Pollock does not suck.
No, he's just not durable.
He is a quality freaking baseball player, but he's not durable. And so now the question is, what does that do to the West?
I think the West is so wide open right now. And this is Justin Turner coming back tonight, already saving a run with this incredible play that he made. I think the NL West is as open as I can ever remember it being. And I said something that I took a lot of heat for in March. I said the San Diego Padres could finish third in the NL West. Am I crazy for saying that now? Well, I probably am, because they lost Joey Lucchesi. He's on the DL with a hip injury. But they won again today. They split a two-gamer with Colorado. They got almost a no-hitter. So, I mean, the pitching is there on a sporadic basis. Clayton Richards had a couple of really good starts back-to-back. Then I look at San Francisco. The news today that Bumgarner threw a 20-pitch bullpen, but will not even go out on a rehab assignment until May 26th. And Boach said today that he wants it to be a three-gamer minimum.
I mean, they're being careful with him, clearly, and I don't blame him. I mean, how are you in a year when there's some question about, like, your ability to make the playoffs? Like, it's not as though, like, everything else is right with the team and they just lost Bumgarner. I mean, it's clearly that they're just not the same team that they used to be.
Are you confident that they can bounce? Can they come back from this?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think they're in great position to come back from it, and I think it's going to take, you know, Bumgarner's really going to have to be special the rest of the year. I mean, he's going to have just a baller finish to the year for them to get to the postseason. But, I mean, I didn't look at the standings today, but they're still right there.
D-backs lineup.
Yeah, here we go.
Lead off Peralta in left. Chris Owings batting second, playing center field. Descalzo at third. Goldie at short. Susan in right. Marte at second. Ahmed at short. Mathis catching Greinke.
Yeah.
Does not excite you.
I mean, right? We're right back where we were.
Their plan is to not acquire anybody for the 6 to 8 weeks, that they will use Owings and Dyson in center field.
I guess if you just want to survive, that's fine. But I think that's the difference between the D-backs and other teams in the West. Other teams in the West would go out and get a guy. They go out and make calls. They go out and try to acquire somebody that can bring them something they don't have.
Yeah.
Even if the guy you get is just more of a hitter and you just got to stick him in right field and shift some things around and, you know, and still defensively you're solid, at least you have that productivity back at the plate. Because that's the biggest thing they're losing, right? Like the offense.
Oh, absolutely.
Like the defense isn't even what we're complaining about.
Well, he's a gold glove center fielder.
He is.
But Dyson can run just as well as Pollock.
Chris Owings is not lost in center. I mean, he's not a gold glover.
Well, two years ago, he played really well in replacing A.J. Pollock when he got hurt 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But I now look at the Dodgers, who seem to be back on the mend, although they're losing in Miami tonight. But you're getting Justin Turner back, which solves a huge problem in the lineup and defensively. Yeah. So that's a big add. I think you're right on about that. The Bumgarner thing is, I think, a real wild card. And the Padres are a wild card. Because when do they start moving guys? When do they start? Because they've got, I think the San Diego Padres on their roster right now, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think they have 37 outfielders. And it might be 38 on their 25-man roster.
Don't forget when Will Myers comes back.
Well, but it's interesting, okay? Because you have all of this young talent, but Jankowski's not a long-term Padre. But wouldn't you love to have him as a fourth outfielder in...
Dude, he's a good bench player.
Yeah, in any of these places? Wouldn't the Colorado Rockies love to have an upgrade at first base? Will Myers? Wouldn't you love... But I'm not trading Will in the division.
Maybe if you were the Rockies, you should have not let Mark Reynolds go.
Yeah. With the Nationals now, two bombs the other night. But I think this division, it's wide open. I'm not buying the Rockies. Sorry, man, not to be a dick about it, but I just don't see
I'm not there either.
Yeah.
And we watched them. We watched John Gray completely melt down in the NLDS, or in the wild card game, rather.
Guy's mouth.
Like, he says he's an ace, but he's not. And he hasn't earned the right to be an ace. And so I just say, you know, until they have an over-the-top great club, I'm not buying it. I'm just not.
Speaking of the Nationals, mm-hmm. do you see they bench Michael A. Taylor?
Oh.
I mean, there. I think that's a situation. Yeah, that's a situation you got to keep an eye on. They're pitching. Gio Gonzalez pitching tonight
I'm
for them.
I'm not a Gio guy.
Five innings, six hits, two earned, four walks.
And that's what happens.
He got by Austin, hit a home run, a two-run home run, and then they tied the game on him in the fifth. They pulled him.
And that's what happens. With his mechanics and being a what they call a rotation pitcher, right? Like, so he almost
he rotates,
think of a spinning top. So the way Gio pitches, his leg kick comes up, but he rotates back towards second base a little bit. So then he's got to rotate back towards home plate to throw the ball. When that happens, you're going to have games where you struggle with command because that doesn't allow you to repeat your mechanics successfully.
Correct. Correct. You know? And then you have the Padres today almost getting a perfect game out of Jordan Lyles through seven and a third, I guess
good
it was.
Outing,
he gives
good.
Up one hit.
Good outing.
But they have an interesting lineup when, by the way, I don't know if you heard this, Eric Hosmer's a complete bust. Everybody hit the panic
it's
button.
So
it's one of the worst
dude.
Signings in the history of Major League Baseball.
Honestly, you know, I love Padre fans. I love their passion. I love how committed to the club they are. But in some respects, that's a joke, man. The guy is not a bust. That's one of the best signings they've had. You know, and everybody says, oh, it's the biggest signing they've ever had. You know, I think he's just a quality player.
Fighting the Celtics-Cavs game, by the way. They are rolling around on the floor. LeBron hit a monster first quarter. Cavs 27-23. The land. I think that's Baines on the floor for Boston. Tied up with somebody. I'm not exactly sure who that is.
Jeff Green, it looks like.
No, that's Larry Nance Jr. Is that Larry Nance Jr.? Yes, that's Larry Nance Jr. I love that they're playing him. Finally. Anyway, here nor there. So the Pods almost get a perfect game today.
Yeah.
And Eric Hosmer's a terrible baseball player who now is hitting 270 with a two-run bomb in the first inning today. Another great pick at first base. He's 2-for-4 today. Jankowski, 2-for-3, is hitting 370 since he got back. This team should be playing young guys. This team, you know, the funny thing is, they put Lucchese on the DL, and they automatically bring back Asuaje today, who's a terrible baseball player, like not a Major League Baseball player.
Yeah.
Carlos Asuaje. I still don't know where Urias is for the Padres. Like, this move makes zero sense to me.
Yeah.
So I just think it's really interesting. And Reyes still, you know, he's up. Margot, I think, is a guy that you got to keep playing. Villanueva, finally, 2-for-3 today, hit another home run. So the NL West just is going to be very compelling.
It's super competitive. Even when the NL West is down, it's up for me. I mean, the division is just outstanding.
Can you jinx a no-hitter on the radio? This is stupid. I just want people to know this. Mark Sweeney, I think it was Sweeney or Grant, whoever was doing the color on TV today, for the Padres, tweeted out that people need to get over themselves because apparently people were ripping it was Mark Grant, one of the color analysts for the Padres, said on Twitter, for all of you out there getting on me and my partner for mentioning Lyles being perfect, save it. So every perfect game or no-hitter thrown, those words have never been mentioned during that particular game. Save it. Tell that to Vin Scully. Like, I don't believe that because you say, well, he's perfect through five, he's perfect through six, oh, he's perfect through seven, that you're jinxing the guy. Like,
first of all,
really?
Is jinxing real?
Well, Grant made also a good point. He said superstitions are for weak minds. Maybe. I don't believe in jinxes.
That depends what you believe, I guess. I mean, yeah.
I mean, if we say the same word at the exact same time, do I have to buy you a Coke? Remember that as a kid? Like, come on. What are we doing?
Yeah, I don't mind. I definitely, when I played it, you don't talk about it. When a pitcher's got a perfect game going, you don't talk about it.
Why?
Because it's a ritual of sorts. Like, there's no good reason, right? It's one of those things where there's no good reason. Like, it's not, like, it really isn't even a big deal. But you just don't say anything. Like, you
why?
See, I don't know why. That's what I'm saying. There's no good reason. Like, it's just, it's what you do as a player. You don't, like the next time you see a guy get, you know, go deep into a game and he's perfect through like 7 or 8, let's say, right? When they watch that game and wait for the shot into the dugout when that team is hitting.
And he's sitting all alone at the end of the bench.
He's sitting alone.
He's
like,
chewing bazooka, and he's got his jacket on, and he's alone with his thoughts because nobody wants to jinx him.
You done?
Shut up. Like, really? Man, no fist bumping during, when he's only, if he's, listen, if he's thrown a two-hit shutout, no fist bumping. Third hit happens, you can't fist bump, only high fives on a three-hit shutout. Too much, or?
You're just a hater.
I'm not a hater.
You are.
What I am is a hater.
Yeah. yeah.
I just, this kind of thing annoys the hell out of me.
Why?
Because they're broadcasters. You're on the radio or you're on TV.
I'm agreeing with you. I don't care about the broadcasters talking about, but what I'm saying is in the dugout.
Can I tweet about it?
Yeah, you can. Yeah.
But I'll be jinxing him, won't I?
No.
Please. In the dugout, his teammates, you say, should just leave him alone.
Well, no, I'm not saying they should or shouldn't. I'm saying that's what happens. That's kind of a baseball ritual.
Yeah. Okay. That's fine. That's fine. I get it. Before we go, because we swore...
We do this every day. Just to be clear, before you say this, we do this every day.
What?
This what we're about to talk about right now. We do this every day.
Okay. We're at 57 minutes right now, and we swore a blood oath, which meant we pricked our fingers and we rubbed it on each other.
Did we just become best friends?
We didn't. And that never happened, by the way. But we swore a blood oath not to go over an hour today. And
okay,
that's
so how long do we have? How long do we have?
2 minutes and 20 seconds.
Okay, let's
so
go this cram is probably, it in, man.
Because, well, we have to talk about urine and urinating it in the middle of the night. So I'm 45.
Mm-hmm.
And when I get gas pain, I think I'm dying of some horrid disease. So I've given up carbonation. And for everybody who doesn't know this, I haven't had a soda in going on... Wow, is it really going to be 4 years? 3 years. 3 years. It'll be 3 years in October that I have not had a soda. But I drink Monster Energy, Ultra Zero. I gave it up because I don't like carbonation. It makes my chest feel like light. It's weird. I don't like the way it makes me feel. Anyway, here and there. So I drink a product from Optimum Nutrition that is basically branched-chain amino acids. It's called Amino Energy. And it's an energy drink. It's got a bunch of caffeine in it. And you'll notice on Periscope that I'm not drinking it. I had a protein shake today before the show. And the reason I'm not drinking it is I don't want the caffeine to affect the way I'm sleeping. And the other thing about caffeine is that it dehydrates you.
Yeah, that's true.
So I've been drinking this amino energy, and I've had to pee like 3 times every 2 hours all night long for like a week. And it is disturbing my sleep. So I decided today that I'm not going to do that. And it drives me nuts. How do you sleep on the whole?
Excellent. Seriously.
You do. Do you usually sleep through the night?
Yeah. The only thing I really struggle with is being hot. Like being like waking up just like really hot. Like last night I had to bring a fan into the room. Like I just had to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, I just couldn't. I couldn't get to sleep. I was so hot.
Okay. How often do you get up to pee in the middle of the night?
I would say a couple times a month. It doesn't happen to me much at all.
For me,
which I think, by the way, is fascinating to me that you have to go so much, but then I don't have to go as much. Like I don't know.
It's at least once a night for me.
I don't
at
know
least
what
once a night.
Like I don't know what goes into that. Like I don't know the science behind that. Like why for
I,
you it
well,
is.
Well, because I drink more water than you do on the whole.
Hmm.
I drink. I probably drink 100 ounces a day. Like I've had 2 of these today. This is what 25 ounces?
Huh?
No, this is 30 ounces. So I've had 30. I've had 60 ounces of water in this. I had 2 18-ounce bottles. So what is that? That's 100 right there. You know, like I drink a lot of water every day, and I drink a non-carbonated Rockstar Recovery lemonade. So like I've had a lot of liquid to drink today.
Yeah, I'm at like 70.
Yeah, so I have to pare that back as the day goes on. But all I drink is water. I don't drink soda. I don't drink wine. I don't generally drink a whole lot of alcohol at all.
Yeah.
I just drink a lot of water.
Yeah.
So it's just it sucks.
I don't know. If I was you, I would be trying to figure out how I can still get that amount of water and that amount that you naturally drink, which is turns out to be enough.
Yep.
But do it in a way where it's not making you get up at night. Because, I mean, you
got
to
stop.
Sleep,
you
got
it. They say you got to stop 6 hours before you go to bed. Because anything that you ingest 6 hours before you go to bed is going to impact the way you sleep. And so that's why I got to cut caffeine. Because I drink a lot of caffeine. I usually drink one or two Monsters, and then I cut out the Monster. So now I drink, you know, 3 scoops of Amino Energy. And I drink 3 or 2 in the morning for the gym.
For reference, 10 is the most you can have in a day.
Yeah. Oh, well, crap. I had 20 right there today. So, well, I only drank half of my amino today. We played basketball this morning, so I didn't drink as much as I probably usually would.
Right.
So I'm at like 150 ounces of water right now. So my point is this. I have to cut caffeine back as the day goes on. Like I should not ingest any caffeine after 3 o'clock. Because I'm an early bed guy.
Love sleeping, dude.
It's the best. I'm usually in bed no later than 9 o'clock because I get up at 4:30 every day to go to the gym. But I get up every day at 4:30 to go to the gym.
Yeah.
So I need to be in bed. I need my 6-7 hours of sleep every night, and I don't get it. I usually get 6.5 hours, and I need more than that. But Billions is on.
For me,
Sports
for me,
is on.
Like, the last thing I'll say about it is, for me, I in the morning when I get up, I feel noticeable difference. Like, if I'm trying to get to sleep at 9 versus 9:30, noticeable difference in the morning.
No,
like,
question about
massive
it.
Massive difference. Like, if I'm like walking into my room at 9:30 and I'm not like closing my eyes trying to go to sleep, you know, by then I'm in trouble the next morning for sure.
Yeah, it is. It's rough, man. Getting up early to go to the gym is rough. Now, I've also done morning radio a ton in my career. So I've been getting up at 2:30 or 3.
I don't have trouble functioning once I get out of bed. It's just getting up.
No, absolutely not. You're right. Once you're out of bed, it's great.
It's good, yeah.
That's why I say you just got to get to the gym. You just got to stand up.
Do you even?
Yeah. Yeah, you probably should. Anyway, that's it. Let's end it right. It's an hour and 3 minutes.
Damn it.
Let's end it right here.
Dude, you're supposed to cram it in 2 minutes, man.
We could. Whoa.
Whoa.
Easy.
Whoa.
We could do the Trump Chinese cell phone maker.
China people?
Okay, that I can't remember that politician's name who did that in his
Cocaine Mitch.
Yeah, Cocaine Mitch and his China people friends. Like, what are you doing? It was in West Virginia, the West Virginia Senate race or whatever. Anyway, we should probably go. You want to start the music or what's the story?
Hey, there's the music.
Yeah. All right, that's it. Find us on Twitter, The Monty Show, MONTY The Monty Show. Say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.